Chapter 49, October 11th, 2006, Washington, D.C. No way was Lauren buying into a wedding only 10 days away. She insisted the nuptials be held 1 month later, which gave her barely enough time to plan the event, reserve a place for the ceremony, have a seamstress fit her with her mother's wedding dress, and arrange for the reception, which would take place amid Pitt's old cars in his hangar. The ceremony took place at the Washington National Cathedral that sits on Mount St. Alban, a hill that dominates the capital city skyline. Officially called the Cathedral Church of St. Peter and St. Paul, it took from 1907 until 1990 to complete it. The first stone was laid in the presence of Theodore Roosevelt. Shaped like the letter T, two towers stand on each side of the entrance at the bottom of the T. The third, the bell tower containing the bells, soars more than 300 feet. The cathedral was built with the same architectural design as those in Europe 800 years ago. It is considered the last pure Gothic architecture in the world. Inside, 215 windows, many with stained glass that filter the sunlight as it enters the walls and tints the floor with their designs. Some feature floral patterns, others have religious images or tales from American history. The most striking window is the Space Window, a work that contains an actual piece of lunar rock. Close to 500 friends and family attended the event. Lauren's father and mother came from their ranch in western Colorado, along with her two brothers and two sisters. Pitt's father, Senator George Pitt, and his mother, Barbara, were there, beaming now that their wild son was finally settling down with a woman they both loved and admired. The Numa gang turned out. Admiral Sandecker, actually looking like he was enjoying himself. Hiram Yeager, with his wife and daughters. Rudy Gunn and Zeri Pashinsky, Pitt's longtime secretary, and a score of other people whom Pitt had worked with during his many years with Numa. St. Julian Perlmutter was there, taking up nearly three places on the bench seats. A large number of Washington's elite were in the audience. Senators, congressmen, bureaucrats, statesmen, and even the president and his wife, who were in residence and able to attend. Lauren's bridesmaids were her sisters. Her matron of honor was her secretary, Marilyn Trask, who had been at Lauren's side from the time she first ran for Congress. Summer Pitt, her soon-to-be daughter-in-law, was also a bridesmaid. Pitt's best man was his old sidekick, Al Giordino, and his ushers were his son Dirk, Rudy Gunn, and Lauren's brothers. Lauren wore her mother's 1950s vintage wedding gown, a combination of white lace and satin with a deep V neckline, embroidered bodice, long fitted sleeves of white lace, and a very full three-layered satin skirt that was worn with a hoop to achieve a dramatic effect. Dirk and his team looked resplendent in white tie and tails. The cathedral choral choir sang as the guests were seated. Then they became stilled as the organ began playing the traditional wedding march. Every head turned and stared up the aisle. At the altar, Pitt and his friends stood in a line and gazed toward the back of the church as the bridesmaids, led by Summer, began walking down the aisle. Lauren, looking radiant as she held the arm of her father, smiled and smiled as she locked eyes with Pitt. When they reached the altar, Mr. Smith stepped aside and Pitt took Lauren's arm. The ceremony was officiated by Reverend Willard Shelton, a friend of Lauren's family. The rite was traditional, with no original odes of undying love given by bride and groom. Afterward, as they walked up the aisle to the entrance of the church, Giordino ran out a side exit and brought the car around to the cathedral steps, just as Pitt and Lauren walked out into a beautiful afternoon with white clouds sailing majestically across the sky. She turned around and threw her bridal bouquet, and it was caught by Hiram Yeager's eldest daughter, who laughed, blushed as red as a valentine, and broke into a fit of giggles. Giordino was waiting in the driver's seat of the rose-colored Marmon V16 as Pitt opened the door for Lauren and helped her inside by folding her wedding gown. No longer accepted, rice was replaced with birdseed that rained down upon them as they waved to the crowd. Giordino eased the gear shift into first and the big car pulled away from the steps of the cathedral. He drove through the gardens onto Wisconsin Avenue and turned toward the Potomac River and Pitt's hangar, where the reception would be held. The rear divider window between the driver's seat and the passengers was rolled up, and Giordino could not hear what Lauren and Pitt were saying. Well, The evil deed is done, Pitt said, laughing. Lauren punched him in the arm. Evil deed? Is that what you call our beautiful wedding? He held her hand and looked at the ring he had slipped on her third finger. It held a 3-carat ruby surrounded by small emeralds. After the shockwave exploits, he was savvy enough to know that rubies and emeralds were 50 times more rare than diamonds, which in reality were a glut on the world market. First, I'm confronted with 2 grown children I never knew I had, and now I have a wife to cherish. I like the word cherish, she said softly, throwing her arms around his neck and kissing him forcibly on the mouth. When he finally eased her back, he whispered, Let's wait for the honeymoon before we get carried away. She laughed and kissed him again. You never told me where you were taking me. You kept it a big surprise. I chartered a small sailing yacht in Greece. We're going to sail around the Mediterranean. Sounds wonderful. Think a Colorado cowgirl can learn to raise sails and navigate? Just watch me. They soon arrived at Pitt's hangar. Giordino used the remote to turn off the security alarms and open the main door. Then he drove the Marmon onto the main floor. Pitt and Lauren stepped from the car and climbed the stairway to his apartment, where they changed into more casual clothes for the reception. St. Julian charged into the hangar like a maddened hippopotamus and began shouting orders to the caterers. He dabbed sweat from his brow brought on by the warm, humid Indian summer day and admonished the maitre d' of Le Courcel, the Michelin 3-star restaurant he had hired to cater the reception. These oysters you expect to serve are the size of peanuts. They simply won't do. I shall have them replaced immediately, the maitre d' promised before rushing away. Soon the guests began arriving and were served a California estate champagne while seated at tables throughout the hangar. They began dabbling into the gourmet delicacies from several buffet tables laid around the ornate antique bathtub with an outboard motor that Pitt had used to escape Cuba many years earlier. The buffet table featured polished silver chafing dishes and iced platters kept filled with every variety of food that could be pulled from the sea, including abalone and sea urchin. Perlmutter did himself proud by creating a menu that most likely would never be duplicated again. When Admiral Sandecker arrived, he asked to see Pitt alone. He was shown into one of the staterooms of the Manhattan Limited Pullman car that Pitt used as an office. After Pitt closed the door and they sat down, Sandecker lit up one of his battleship cigars and blew a blue haze toward the paneled ceiling. You know that Vice President Holden is in poor health, the Admiral began. I've heard rumors. The situation is much worse. Holden isn't expected to live out the month. I'm sorry to hear that, said Pitt. My father has known him for 30 years. He's a good man. Sandecker looked at Pitt to see his reaction. The president has asked me to be his running mate in the next election. Pitt's heavy black brows knitted together. The president is a shoo-in to win. Somehow, I can't picture you as a vice president. Sandecker shrugged. It's an easier job than I have now. Yes, but Numa is your life. I'm not getting younger, and I'm burned out after 25 years in the same job. It's time for a change. Besides, I'm not the type to sit as a do-nothing vice president. You've known me long enough to know I'll shake the government by the throat. Pitt laughed. I know you won't hide in a closet in the White House or remain silent on issues. Especially environmental issues pertaining to the seas, Sandecker elaborated. When you think about it, I can do more good for Numa from the White House than I can in my fancy office across the river. Who takes over as head of Numa? Asked Pitt. Rudy Gunn? Sandecker shook his head. No, Rudy doesn't want the job. He feels more comfortable as second in command. Then who do you plan to tap? A sly smile spread Sandecker's thin lips. You, he replied briefly. At first, the word you flew over Pitt's head, and then it sank in. Me? You can't be serious. I can't think of a more qualified person to take the reins. Pitt came to his feet and paced the room. No, no, I'm not an administrator. Gunn and his team can handle the day-to-day business, explained Sandecker. With your background of achievement, you'd be the perfect choice to act as Numa's chief spokesman. The enormity of the decision was not lost on Pitt. I've got to think about this. Sandecker came to his feet and walked to the door. Think about it during your honeymoon. We'll discuss it when you and Lauren return. I've got to discuss it with her first, now that we're married. We've already talked. She's in favor. Pitt fixed the admiral with an iron stare. You old devil. Yes, said Sandecker cheerfully. I am that. Pitt returned to the reception and mingled with the guests, posing for pictures with Lauren and their parents. He was talking with his mother when Dirk came up and tapped Pitt on the shoulder. Dad, there's a man at the door who wants to see you. Pitt excused himself and walked through the rows of old cars and the throng of friends and guests. When he reached the door, he found an older man, around 70, with white hair and beard. He stood almost the same height as Pitt, and though his eyes were not as green, they had a similar twinkle. Can I help you? Asked Pitt. Yes, I contacted you some time ago about coming by and viewing your car collection. We parked next to each other at a concourse a few years ago. Of course, I displayed my Stutz, and you had a Hispano Suiza. Yes, that's right. The man looked behind Pitt at the festivities. It seems I've come at a bad time. No, no, said Pitt in a happy mood. It's my wedding day. You're welcome to join the party. That's very gracious of you. I'm sorry, I've forgotten your name. The old man looked at him and smiled. Cussler. Clive Cussler. Pitt studied Cussler pensively for a long moment. Strange, he said in a vague tone. I get the feeling I've known you for a long time. Perhaps in another dimension. Pitt put his arm around Cussler's shoulders. Come on in, Clive, before my guests drink up all the champagne. Together, they stepped into the hangar and closed the door. This is Scott Brick. We hope you've enjoyed this production of Trojan Odyssey by Clive Cussler. To find out more about the complete Books on Tape catalog of unabridged audiobooks, call our customer service department at the number on this package or visit us online at booksontape.com. Trojan Odyssey. Copyright 2003 by Sandecker, RLLLP. Published by arrangement with G.P. Putnam Sons, a member of Penguin Group USA, Incorporated. Production copyright 2003, Books on Tape, Incorporated.